If you're looking to buy back your time and grow as an entrepreneur, you do not want to miss this episode. Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanzino, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Got a big win last week, Stenziano. You know what it was?
Maybe. I don't know. Tell me.
I think I may have a future country singer on this podcast. Someone's doing voice lessons. You can. I'm opera your country, bro. Can you see it? Can you see it happening?
You getting Morgan Wallen on?
I'm going to get you on, Stenziano. Maybe
you're going to get me singing country.
On stage. You're doing voice lessons, bro. It's a natural progression. Once working on the voice, I get a little opera, a little scola, a little chant
Gino,
going
on. It's down. All right, enough of this shit. We're going to get into it because Gino's going off the rails. Today's guest founded, scaled, and successfully exited three technology companies. We learned about something called SaaS today, and it's not what your wife gives you when you talk back. We're going to find out more about that. This all happened within a 10-year period. His new book, Buy Back Your Time, shows you how to scale your business fast while avoiding burnout, the entrepreneur's bane, trading time for money. So without further ado, Dan Martell, welcome to the show.
Guys, Jake, Gino, thanks for having me, man. I'm pumped.
Hey, you better be pumped coming on this show. It is our pleasure. We want to learn a little bit about your background and how you got started in business.
Yeah. So what's crazy is I actually grew up living a pretty challenging life. Ended up in prison twice by the age of 17. And
jail or prison?
Jail. Well, juvenile detention the first time and then adult jail the second time. Because of the severity of my crimes. Yeah, it was kind of bananas.
Didn't know we were going there this morning.
I know. Well, it all ties together because essentially I ended up doing 6 months in the adult prison the second time, released to a rehab center for 11 months. And it was there at the end of the program, I was helping the maintenance guy, this guy named Rick, clean out one of the cabins because it was built on an old church camp. And in one of the rooms was this old computer in a yellow book on Java programming sitting next to it. And for whatever reason, it spoke to me and I just opened it up and started following chapter one prompts. And I got the computer to say, hello world, which I know you guys are impressed. I didn't know that that meant nothing, but at the time I thought it might've meant that maybe my brain worked better for computers than anything else. And
he's Steve Wozniak.
Yeah, like literally it was funny because I grew up with so little self-esteem and I don't know why that moment just like spoke to me. But it's funny because I got out, I ended up moving to live with my dad and he made this commitment with me because I just like, it became my new addiction. I mean, that's the truth. It's like I replaced, you know, drugs and hanging out with the wrong people with writing code.
And was it an environmental issue? Was it the wrong environment? You're a good person. You were just running with the wrong crowd? Because that's very interesting. It sounds like you replaced one for the other.
I think it was, I was always somebody that was just, no matter what I did, I was going to do it at 100%. And yeah, because of just the environment I grew up in, I was just pushed towards things that were illegal. And even my uncle says this. He remembers one time I was helping him. My dad owned with my uncle some cottages that they would rent out, and I was helping them with some construction. And we were putting this like wall product on that was like really hard, and I was hitting it with a nail, and it kept like smashing my hand. And then I went and grabbed pliers, and then I was holding the nail with the pliers, and I would smash the nail with the pliers. And he just looked at me one day when I was like 15. And he's just like, "You're not an idiot." Because the other guys are idiots for smashing their hands. You actually went and found a plier. Like, he still tells this story to this day. So I think I've always had something there. I just needed something that wasn't illegal. And luckily it was software. And this is 97.
But they didn't call you a sissy for that either, though.
They may have behind my back. I just didn't
okay,
care.
I was going to say, because
I'm also a pretty big dude and I don't mind throwing hands. So
scrapping it.
Maybe that's why. Yeah. But that was the beginning. Yeah. Yeah.
You talk about in the book the dysfunctional family theory, and I want to just I don't want to challenge you, but I grew up in a pretty normal household, and I'm 1 out of 10. You said 9 out of 10, and I know a lot of people who love that chaos addiction. Did you? Were you addicted to that chaos early on? And do you think a lot of entrepreneurs really, they thrive from the chaos and they thrive from the dysfunctional family, and they just want to end up building something like you did?
I think what I've discovered, and I've studied a lot of it because I do a lot of work with at-risk youth. Like even tonight, I'm giving a keynote to about 80 kids. It's what happens is that when people go through chaos, usually between the ages of 9 and 13, it obviously shapes them. And, you know, some people go through a path of PTSD, which is like a post-traumatic stress disorder. And other people go PTGD, which is post-traumatic growth disorder. And as you get older, if you've gone through that chaos, you actually learn a very valuable skill, which is to deal with uncertainty. And if you think of what entrepreneurship at its core is, I'm okay not knowing anything about the future, but taking action towards this and being self-sufficient and self-reliant and all these things. Do you need to go through major chaos to learn that skill? Nope. You can have that through mentorship. You can have that through, you know, personal journey. And chaos is relative, right? Like, just because you didn't go to jail doesn't mean you didn't have a tough childhood. It didn't mean you didn't suffer some level of trauma, abuse, or whatever. But, you know, some people say to me, well, it's my mom died when I was 12. And I'm like, okay, well, that obviously is going to shape you because now you had to take care of yourself. Maybe you live with your grandparents. Maybe you got taken out of your home like I did. But it's really just that having to deal with uncertainty and making that part of your character that inherently makes you well poised for entrepreneurship. Like every kid I talk to, all these at-risk youth, they are literally the world's best entrepreneurs. They know how to negotiate. They know how to take risks. They know how to be resourceful. Like these are all the traits of a great entrepreneur. They just haven't directed that energy towards anything positive, right? And I always tell my friends when we're walking by like a group of people in the homeless shelters or whatever, like there's like 1 degree of separation between them and us. Like they just haven't discovered. Like think about how obsessed you guys are probably are. And I know because I watch your content on the real estate side, like the drug addicts, the homeless people, they're just that obsessed about getting high by 2 p.m. in the afternoon. Like they wake up with no money, zero resources. And by 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they're high or drunk. That's impressive. If they could just take that level of tenacity and resourcefulness to something positive, I think there would be success stories. And I know that, you know, my buddy Josh says this often. He says every troubled youth is one caring adult away from being a success story, and that was my journey.
Dan, I'm very intrigued by what you're saying. Do you think it's let me get very clear on this. So these at-risk kids, they've had a life where they've been put out there to fend for themselves. Do you think there would be more potential entrepreneurs out there in general if parents let their kids fail a little bit more and did not give them so much?
You absolutely nailed it. Okay, so here's the challenge for me, and I'm sure you guys have dealt with this. I know, Gino, for sure you have kids. Jake, I'm assuming. Do you have kids, Jake?
3 spot.
Perfect. So as people of means, the biggest fear I had when I started bringing, you know, these humans into the world was the thing that would probably crush me the most is raising entitled little brats, right?
Yeah, like little shits.
Yeah, little shits. I was like, oh my gosh, I hope I don't do that. But hey, when, you know, in my world, when I'm flying private and I live in an affluent neighborhood and I, you know, I'm the guy on stage and get accolades, the kids see this and I'm like, but I don't want to reduce my lifestyle. Like I don't want to have to live in certain neighborhoods or drive older cars or whatever, just because I don't want my kids. And so I worried about this. And then I thought, okay, well, what's the opposite? Am I really going to bring my kids into the woods at 12 years old and throw them and then run away and hope they figure their way home?
Yes. Like
some, yeah, maybe. So I talked to my buddy Ben Greenfield, who did this. He's a big biohacker and has twins, and he actually did this. What I discovered is, I think what you just alluded to, Jake, is I think the world is hard enough on us if we allow the world to be hard on our kids. So what does that mean? I'm okay with my kids being bullied and we have conversations about it. I'm okay with...
It's tough.
I know it's tough, but I know that it's shaping them. And if I try, it's just the same thing. Like when I used to pick up my kids at daycare when they were 3 and 4 years old, and I would sit there in the lobby and watch every parent put their kids' shoes on, grab the backpack, stuff their arms in their jackets, and literally treat them like they were disabled. And I would just sit there with my two kids are 11 months apart, so they're Irish twins. So I was always picking them up together. They were almost the same size. And I would just sit there and watch them and work with them to let them pick up their own stuff. I refused to do it. I wasn't going to do it. Once they were old enough, and I remember the teacher, the first grade teacher, we went into like the day before they started school. She brought in all the parents. And I was sitting there in those little desks. It was so ridiculous as a thing to see. And she says to all the parents, please do not put your kids' backpacks together. Because if you do it at home, then they're going to expect me to do it in class and you're going to create work for me. Do not take that from your kids. And I was like clapping it up. I was like, yeah, this is the teacher I want. That's my philosophy. I think the world will be hard. I think it should be hard. And I let the world be hard on them, but I will always be there to support them. And I'll always be there to breathe into them their confidence. Same thing with social media. Like, there's nothing wrong with social media. There's a problem with social media with kids that do not have a high self-esteem or self-worth because their parents have not been consciously, intentionally breathing that into them, right? Like if a kid has to go to video games to take care of themselves, social media to feel pretty about themselves or, you know, whatever, that's a problem with the environment. That's not necessarily a problem with the platforms. That's, again, this is my thoughts, maybe a little controversial. I also think school is
I don't think it's controversial at all.
Well, for some parents, because I also call school, government-supported daycare, and that every kid
is
homeschooled.
We both homeschool. We both homeschool our kids because we wanted to opt out. I did not want that shit. Yeah.
Well, and I just think every kid's homeschooled. It's whether the parents realize it or not.
Yeah.
In my situation, Dan, you know, I've got a 23-year-old all the way down to an 8-year-old, and the oldest one is a Catholic missionary. I did not want her to become a missionary. I wanted her to become an entrepreneur, but she chose the path. And I think as adults and as parents, we need to raise happy, healthy children who can make decisions on their own, and we have to abide by those decisions. Now, we have much more luxurious things, but I bought her a car 5 years ago, so the things that I can help her with, take things off the table for her and let her become the person that she needs to become. But as adults, we need to have boundaries, and those boundaries, as the kids get older, set them. My kids don't get a phone until they're 13 years old. They're not on social media until they're 14 or 15, and then when they're on it, they're not hanging out all the time. We homeschool all six of them, so they all hang out together. They love each other, and their self-esteem, I think, is pretty high. I think Jake could attest to that, and that's what we're there for. We're there to have these boundaries, and as they get older, you just keep moving the fence post a little bit more, and every child is different. That's the thing I think people have to understand. I have one who's a complete lunatic. I mean, she during COVID never wore a mask. I always got yelled at, and it was just the funniest thing in the world. We were in Italy last year. I'm like, if you don't put a mask on this bus, they're gonna throw my ass in an Italian jail. Do you want me to go to jail in Italy? She's like, I don't care, Dad. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go to jail in Italy. I'll see you later. That's her. You know what I mean? Like, the other ones are a little bit more compliant. So I think understanding what your children, their personalities. But what if I have to ask you about at-risk youth, what can we do to help at-risk youth? Because my whole mission now in life has changed to, I think the nuclear family is so important. I think a father and a mother being there, we have different things that we can give to our children. I have certain skills that I can give to my kids. My wife has other skills. What can we do as a society, as men right now, helping at-risk youth? I know what you're doing is awesome. You're out there, you're speaking to them. What messages, what can we do to actually help kids who are at risk right now?
I think it comes down to one core idea, and it's just the power of believing in them. When I was 15, 16, I was in the adult jail, and I got in a fight over breakfast with this kid named Kirk, and I got thrown in the hole, solitary confinement for 3 days. And it's probably the worst thing you can do to a human, where you're literally in your underwear for 23 half hours a day. Staring at a stainless steel toilet and sink and nothing. Like, they don't give you books. They don't give you anything. You just sit there by yourself. And on the third day, I had the door open up, and it was this guard named Brian who had been working. He'd probably been at the prison for like 10 years. And he was one of those guys that was like, look the other way if, you know, you wanted to grab a second dessert, but you had to respect him. So he was like, if you respected him, he kind of knew areas that he would give you a little bit more leeway. But if you didn't, you had zero from him. So everybody kind of looked up to Brian because he was one of those, he's like a man's man. Didn't say a whole lot, but, you know, you could feel it in his energy. And he just opened up the door and he was shaking his head disappointed. just staring at me and just being like, what are you doing, Dan? And he says, come with me. And I'm walking back with him towards the cell block. And we walk past the door of the entryway, which I've never been past the door, because when we line up to go to the gym or to the to get some food, we stop and we go in the cell block. And the next door he opens up is the guard unit that overlooks the two cell blocks. It's like in the corner. It's on the other side of the one-way mirror that I've never seen inside of, and I've been there for months. And he asked me to follow him, and there's nobody else in there, and I know I'm not supposed to be in there, and I didn't know what was going on. And I walk in, and he asked me to sit down in the corner, and he just sits me on this chair and then pulls up another chair right in front of me and just looks at me, and he goes, what are you doing here, Dan? And I was like, well, I got in a fight with Kirk and, you know, over coffee. And he's like, no. He goes, not that. He goes, what are you doing in this place? And I was like, well, I got in a high-speed chase and I had fire, you know, guns and all the stuff. And he shakes his head and he goes, no, man. He goes, what are you doing here? And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, I've been working here for a long time and I've seen a lot of kids. And I watch you do your homework. I watch you stay out of the, you know, prison politics. I see you try to keep to yourself. And dude, you do not belong here. And in that moment, I just like broke down. I didn't understand what he was saying. But at that moment, something broke inside of me, because essentially he was saying he believed in me and what I could become way more than I ever thought of myself. For my whole life, I thought I was broken. Put on ADHD medication, Ritalin when I was 11, taken out of my home when I was 12, like just pure zero self-worth. And here's a guy for the first time in my life. And maybe other people had said it prior to that. I just wasn't listening. But he had no reason to do that. He could have got in trouble for having me in that room. And that just set me on a completely different path of, if Brian thinks this and he would know, maybe there's truth to this. And I'm going to at least try to live into that a little bit. And I had several people like Brian show up in my life over the years. And that's what I do for the kids. And I just think this is a daily opportunity, right? I would ask everybody listening, like, when you're at a restaurant and you see a dad go above and beyond, you know, dealing with a tough kid, right? Where you see like he's just, the kid's freaking out on the floor and the dad just showing up like a man and being present for his kid and not, you know, freaking out, and then just like allowing the child to be. And then like, when I see that stuff, I go up and I just let him know, hey dude, that was beautiful. You're an incredible father. And I walk away. And my wife thinks it's the weirdest thing, because I'll do it in the passport lineup at the airport. I'll stop my car. If I see something on the side of the road where I'm like, that's awesome. Like if somebody broke down and there's five or six people pushing the car off the road, I'll roll down my window and go, you guys are awesome. Thanks for helping that guy. And they're just like, thanks. Okay. Well, I don't know. And I'm just like, I just think it costs us nothing to see opportunities of like, just, and this is what the kids, like, nobody's ever told them like, oh, that thing you're doing, that's abnormal. That is incredible. I can't believe you did that. That's what we do for our kids. I know Gino and Jake, you guys do this for your kids, and maybe you're not even aware that you do it, but you breathe the possibility into them through the recognition. And I think that's probably one of the most powerful things that we could do, because that's what they feed off of, is somebody that has no reason to slow down, to stop, to acknowledge somebody that they respect, because obviously you guys are successful, right? I understand my responsibility when I go speak to those kids. It's, yes, it's a message, but it's also when I'm doing the Q&A is just like try to find something and just let them know what I think. So that's kind of my thing.
Is that your next book then? So I want to jump into the buyback your time book. That sounds like something.
This one took me two and a half years to write, so I'm going to stay on this one for a few years.
I'm just saying to myself, I'm going to the next one, baby.
We're drifting on an e-brake right now.
Yeah,
I just think it's an you know, so you're buying back your time. So it'll give you the ability to be able to spend a year or two writing the book. And it's not as hard as you think. You going to all of these speaking events, you recording them, you taking content from them. And it's just amazing. And having certain interviews with certain kids and following their trajectory. It's a lot. Hey, if you need help, I'll help you out with this because I love this kind of stuff. So listen, buy back your time. What made you write this book? I mean, 2.5 years is a long time and a lot of effort.
Yeah. And so, like, as you mentioned, you know, speaking and recording, which is my life, I've got, I think my team told me, because I'm working on this new AI bot, and I've got like 2,000 hours of recorded Q&A coaching. But I had a lot more of other stuff, training, podcasts, YouTube, stuff like that. And so the reason I wrote the book is because I'm a software guy, and I learned this concept called first principles, which a lot of people may have heard Elon talk about, but it's a physics concept of like just distilling problems down into first principles. And as long as you don't violate the laws of physics, then it should work. Okay. So it takes the emotion out of decisions. And because of that, I'm incredibly efficient with my time. And it's just natural. It just came naturally as a software guy. And, you know, when people spend time with me, my friends, most of them are entrepreneurs, business owners, they're just not in software. So I've been teaching this concept, the buyback principle, for probably 13 years since my first angel investment when I was, this is maybe 15 years ago. I did my first investment when I was 26, I'm 43 now. So a really long time. And I would just teach these entrepreneurs how to think about their time, right? Leverage the three money trades, you know, time for money, money for time, and then money for money. Anybody in real estate, you guys get this cold, but it's even more than that. It's just apply it to your life, apply it to your calendar. So the buyback principle states that we don't hire people to grow our business. We hire people to buy back our time, because if you do the second, you'll get the first. But if you do the first, you won't get the second, right? And the whole reason people build businesses is to have freedom, optionality, more time to create. And unfortunately, the way most entrepreneurs build their business is they build a company they grow to hate. Right. And the biggest risk to a business is the entrepreneur deciding, I just don't want to do this anymore. It's not the market. It's not the opportunity. Like, all those are solvable problems. But if you get to a place where you wake up and you hate the business you've created, everybody on your team is at risk of losing their job. Every partner you have, every affiliate, every everything. And so,
Gino, were you there with the restaurant? Because I think you might be talking to the guy right now. I don't know. Gino, I don't want to speak for you.
You mean I'm washing dishes, I'm making $200,000 a year, but I'm doing $12 an hour work where I should have been outsourcing that work, trying to outsource it. I read the book and I wanted to throw up, Dan. Really, I threw up in my mouth a couple times. I'm like, hey, where was Dan 15 years ago? But it's very hard, because you have to understand, everyone listen to this, it's emotional. I just read The Psychology of Money again. What's your relationship with money? Money's greatest intrinsic value is its ability for you to buy back your time. How awesome. Think about that. Let that resonate for a second. We're not getting money to accumulate it, which is what we're thinking, putting money into a 401k, saving money for a rainy day. We're actually getting money for it to be a value for us to buy back our time. Once I became financially free, I could start Jake and Gino. I can write a kid's book. I can actually do the things that I wanted to. And I think people who have the poor person mentality, you can be making seven figures right now and you're thinking, I'm talking it like I just had a hit of a crack pipe right now, because you do not understand what I'm talking about, because you're living paycheck to paycheck. But the reality is you're trying to make money, to save, to buy assets that will be able to produce cash flow, that will be able to get your time back. And once you have your time back, the ironic thing is you start making more money, because money is just a result. It's the ability for you to actually become really good at something, and then all of a sudden you start to outsource it and get bigger, and then you make more money. And then, wow, I can go buy another business and do it again, and I can buy a third business. And you talk about, Clancy, Buffett, Warhol, Bezos, Jobs, in your book, talk about, that's basically what they did. They figured that out. And we're not taught this in school, because if we're taught this in school, then we don't need the government. Then we look at money in a different way. We have total respect. So for everybody,
we don't need the government.
Well, we don't, but I'm just saying the reality is, when you're reading this book, you read this book, but read Psychology of Money as well, because you have to understand what your relationship with money is. Because the first 7 years of your life, it's all about the subconscious, what you've been planted in. And I was taught early on, don't take risks, you know, be small, stay small, don't go out of your comfort zone. And I had a restaurant for 20 years. I meet the jabroni that's on the other line, and in 5 years, we got 1,500 apartment units. What changed? Not much. I mean, other than my blueprint, my financial blueprint, and the ability to see what money really is. It's just an object for you to use. It's a medium of exchange. And if you look at it as hoarding, that's the scarcity mindset. If you have the abundance mindset, money's there to be used. And, you know, you see it in the bank. It's just numbers. You get out there. You start to continue to buy more assets. Didn't mean to go on so long.
Man, we got them fired up today, Dan.
No, I love it. We got to clip this out, send it out on the YouTube shorts. It's what you're saying, and this is what I try to talk about in the buyback loop, which is audit, transfer, fill, is money is energy exchange. And what people, and when we're buying back our time, what we're essentially saying is there's these tasks that suck my energy that I don't enjoy doing. And if I can buy that back to do things that give me energy, then you're actually doing the right thing in the world, because the world supports those that support life. You showing up with better energy throughout your day for your team, for your family, for your community is going to produce abundance. Like, this is, I didn't talk a lot about that in the book, but it is actually the big idea that the people that start to achieve it go like, oh shit, I'm creating at a level that I never thought was possible, because I'm trading this thing called money for time, but really it's energy, because I'm also being deliberate about what I fill my calendar with things that should make me more money and give me more energy.
Can I piggyback on that, Dan, real quick?
100%.
So you were talking about outsourcing the tasks that do not give you energy. There's a point one to that I've realized over the last few years, and it's putting accelerators on your team versus Eeyores. An Eeyore is going to come to you and go, oh, we can't do it today, it's raining out. And that's going to suck the life out of you, where if you have accelerators, if you've surrounded yourself with accelerators that only bring solutions when there's problems and actually add fuel to your fire, that's going to propel you that much further. So it's getting those things off your desk that you're not good at. I should never be bookkeeping. We learned that early on in our business, right? We got that out. But I should also not be partnering with a bookkeeper that sucks the life out of me and says, oh, it's too hard today, we can't do it. So there's a point one to that. And I think it's surrounding yourself with accelerators versus Eeyores. And that's going to further add fuel to your fire and propel you. So
what's interesting about that, Jake, I just want to mention this, is you nailed it. And it's why in the book I had to write about leadership and hiring. So there's books on productivity, okay? Getting Things Done by David Allen, Checklist Manifesto, The E-Myth, like all that stuff exists. But when I wrote this book, I wrote 25 names down. These are my family members and my best friends that are all entrepreneurs. And I literally said, what is the thing that they're dealing with that stops them, the psychology of money? And I've created the 5 Time Assassins chapter because of those 25 people. But we are responsible, like you said, the Eeyores versus accelerators. Like, hiring is a skill. And no matter who you are in business, you will hit your complexity ceiling based on what you're capable of. So you wish things were easier, but they're not. You just get better. And to me, hiring and then leading, you mentioned leading, it was so beautiful the way you said this. Like, one of the frameworks I teach in the book, I had 4 chapters on leadership I had to cut because my publisher's like, hey, let's stick to this, maybe in the future, whatever. But I fought for 2 things. One was the 1-3-1 rule and the transformational leadership. But the 1-3-1 rule is probably the most important thing any entrepreneur could learn, which is nobody's allowed to bring me a problem without first stating specifically what the problem is that you want to talk about. 2, give me 3 viable options you've considered to solve that problem. And 3, what is your 1 recommendation? So even as a leader, we could have accelerators and still not lead them in a way where they can accelerate, right? And I believe some Eeyores, if you use this pattern, you can teach them to show up differently for you. Because literally, I will tell people, what's your 1-3-1? And they're like, I don't know. And I said, great. How much time do you need to figure it out? Give me a day. Perfect. Circle back when you have something. I'm not engaging in the conversation. 0, because I think we teach people how to treat us. And because of that, like, those simple, like, changes, some people teach their team to make them dependent on the CEO. And they like that. Chaos, oh, I like when you come to me with problems. I want you to keep coming to me with problems. Well, guess what? You will always build a business that's dependent on you. The genius with 1,000 servants. I want to be the dumbest person in the room. And I have proof that I am because I do profile assessments with IQ tests. And I have the lowest IQ on my whole freaking team. And I'm proud of it. I should probably put that on the social media. Like literally.
Also, the team owns the outcomes though. When it's their idea, they own it. And they're not like, well, Dan told me to do it. Fucking idiot. No, it's their solution they came up with and they own it.
It's literally like you've read my book. It's right there. Outcomes. The transformational leadership is outcome first, measure then coach, and it's a completely
virtual
different
fist
method.
Bump, bro.
Love it.
Well, you're talking about the fixed mindset. We can go into the book Mindset by Carol Dweck, and she talks about Lee Iacocca. Like he had to own everything. It was all his idea, and that works well in the short run. But in the long run, you have backstabbing. You have no problem solving. You want to take credit for everything, and then you go out, whether it's Enron, whether it's Iacocca, all the companies have those similar qualities. I want you to share the formula that you use on if you're doing – you know, if you're making $100 an hour, how do you what should be buying back? Because that's really important.
The buyback rate? Is that the formula?
Please.
Yeah. Yep. So again, I'm a first principles guy because of my software background. And this is what people, you know, some people are left brain, right? Some people are like, I can sell them on the emotional side of buying back their time to be present for their kids, to have time to go to the gym, to just, you know, that. Or I can say, look, this is just fundamentally, you can't build a $1 million company doing $10 tasks, okay? So the buyback rate states this, is that it's a formula that you take your income, and your income is what you pay yourself from your business, your profit maybe at the end of the year, plus whatever discretionary expenses you put through your businesses because, hey, nobody wants to pay taxes. But it's still value created from the business that you receive as a CEO. You take that total amount of money and you divide it. There's two divisions. The first one's 2,000, which is the average amount of hours in a year if you take weekends and holidays away. So 2,000 hours a year. And then the other one is 4, because I want people to get a 4x ROI on buying back their time. So if you take 100,000 a year, 70K in salary, 20K in profit, and 10K in discretionary expenses, that works out to $12.50. Most people are like, well, how do I hire somebody for $12.50? Well, it's you want to hire somebody that's super seasoned and above you. I call that building a top heavy organization. The problem with that is that you wake up one day, you got about 12 or 13 people reporting to you and you hate your day. It's spent telling people what to do, checking they got done, telling them what to do next, because you didn't actually buy back your time. You just added capacity. And what I recommend instead is using the buyback rate to then do the time and energy audit in the calendar. Okay. And I teach all this in the book with templates and everything because I really want to make it tactical, but very story-based and belief busting as well. And when you do a time and energy audit and you just look every 15 minutes, I just got off one of my, I have a private coaching client and he had to redo this because he just had a bunch of different businesses restructure. I was like, dude, just let's do a 2-week audit. And what you do is you log everything every 15 minutes. And at the end of the 2 weeks, you come back and you highlight in red things that take your energy, highlight in green things that give you energy, and then put a value score to each one of those tasks. Is it $1 sign, which is essentially your buyback rate, or is it $2, $3, or $4 signs, which is essentially your value creation per hour? Because the mistake some people make is they're starting off and they're like, I need a social media publisher to deal with my podcast. It's like, you don't make any money. So you can't afford that person, but you don't know that. So essentially you're going to grow and then you're going to go, well, I've worked twice as hard this year and I made no profit. Start with the stuff, and it's a forcing function for you to take the lower value stuff that takes your energy off the plate, bookkeeping, administrative stuff, running around, running errands, having somebody clean your house. I don't even care what the task is, but there are so many things that people that are capable of producing more that would love to work on things that light them up, that pepper their calendar with things that anybody could do that they actually don't like to do. And when you add red energy taking stuff throughout your day, you actually take away from the momentum you could build by showing up more powerfully for everybody that you're going to interact with. And that to me is why the buyback rate is like the first thing I need to get people on board with to then unlock their calendar, to then talk about how do we transfer and fill, which is the buyback loop, right? Audit, transfer, fill is the whole rhythm.
Before we go to the personal growth questions, I want everyone to think of what tasks they want to buy back. I mean, for myself, I started out with the bookkeeper. Then I went with the editor. We hated editing podcasts. I got pool maintenance on there. I like doing the pool, but not every week. I may miss it. So $150 a week for somebody to come clean up. $150 a month in Florida, actually, for the pool. Lawn maintenance, $200 a month to do my lawn. No brainer. Car wash, love when people wash the car. House cleaning, I mean, amazing. These things, they start adding up, but at the time, you're getting an hour here, an hour there, and it's more for me, you know, we had interviewed David Allen on getting things done. It's more for me the mind dump of saying, oh, do I have time to clean the pool this week, or what am I going to get it done? It's not even a thought anymore. It gets done, and when I want to use it, it's there, and it's a cost where 10 years ago, my relationship with money was, I'm too damn cheap to do it. I'm going to do it myself, but I'm stressing out about it, and I'm sucking the energy of me. So before we go and take the break, I want everyone just to ponder for a second and say, what are the things that I'm doing that are taking energy away from me that I can outsource? One thing, commit to one thing by the end of the show, and then you'll see once you get that off your plate, you'll feel a lot better, and you'll start going down the list of things that you do want to get rid of.
Boom. All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
A question Gino and I get a lot is, what's a great value add?
You've just closed a deal, and you're looking for a way to maximize the attractiveness of your complex to potential renters.
At Rand Property Management, we start at the bottom. Literally, we start with the flooring.
And that means we start with a call to Christian Chapman and his team at David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring. No one wants to deal with the expense and hassle of putting in new floors, and that is exactly why we turn to David's Abbey.
David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring provides a quality, long-lasting product at a great price. The wear layer and waterproofing that comes standard with all David Abbey products will ensure you are on solid ground for years to come.
My favorite part of working with Christian and his team is convenience. David's Abbey will direct ship their product anywhere in the U.S. That's white glove service, folks.
And your installation team will love how easy it is to install. The next time that you're looking for a great value add, give our friends at David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring a call and speak with Christian.
Or click the link in the show notes to visit their website today.
All right, we're back. I wanted to ask earlier, but I've never heard of post-traumatic growth disorder. And I want to know, Dan, is this something you made up? Is this a real thing? And what is it?
I heard somebody say it, and I wish I could give credit to it, but you know how like most quotes are. It's either Einstein or Nelson Mandela, so who knows? It's just the, because people kept asking me when I got out of rehab, you know, like, unfortunately, you know, a lot of the kids I went there, they didn't make it. And when I say they didn't make it, I mean, took their lives or ended up in prison for the rest of their lives, right? Or some mental institution. And people always go, what did you figure out that was different? And I think it was just the association. I've done enough personal development over the years to now understand that, you know, no matter what happens to us, we decide the meaning we attach to it. And when I was younger and I got in this high-speed chase and I almost took my life by pointing a handgun at the police, and I woke up the next morning sober, I just started telling myself, like, I'm alive for a reason. I don't know what that reason is. I didn't believe in God at the time. I just said, okay, if you help me get through this, I will just promise to be a good like citizen. There was no like grand plan. It was literally like, I will just stop being, you know, a criminal and a bad person. And I just lived.
You're
into
making
that.
Trades with God at this point to get your ass out of that. Yeah.
Anything. Anybody that's ever been in a freaking hole. And that's what I love about God. He will literally show up when you need him the most. And when you give it to him, he will, man, it's beautiful. So I didn't know it at the time. And, but that was the meaning I gave it. And then as I kept going on and I saw evidence of like computer programming, and I was just like, wow, I really love to do this. Like, it's pretty awesome that something that is, for some people would consider boring, like I would stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning writing code, building products for my friends or websites, or, you know, I built so much stuff just like hacking on things and connecting things. And it's become my profession. Like, it's, you know, I've invested in 50 plus companies as an angel investor, like Udemy, Intercom, Hootsuite, like multi-billion dollar companies today. I now buy software companies. I mean, I'm at the level today, and I don't share this to brag. I just want people to understand, like, the buyback principle, the subtitle is in build your empire. Like, it's get unstuck, reclaim your freedom, and build your empire. And the reason why, the empire for me is a life of unlimited creation that you never have to retire from. Like, that's the empire.
Thank you.
And that's available. Yes. And that's everybody.
No, thank you. And I want to say this though, because
I struggle at times where it's like, everyone's like, I'm going to reach the moment. I'm going to retire. I'm going to live on the beach. I'm going to golf every day. I'm going to do this. My wife would fucking kill me if I stopped working because there's, and we have a great relationship, but what am I going to do if I'm not creating and finding purpose within my life? So many people see this end of the road as I can't wait to get there. You're just starting when you get there. When you get to that point where you don't have to work, that's when you can be at your highest level of creativity and fulfillment. There's no end in the road, guys. This is life. It doesn't stop when you reach a point. And if it does, you probably die. How many people have you seen that retired and die within a few weeks for whatever reason? They probably lost the purpose in their life.
Well, it's like saying I'm going to retire from being me. Like, I can't. I'm just me. Like, I love talking to entrepreneurs and building stuff from
nothing.
Maybe
you're not even me yet. Maybe you're this person that's a different character, and you're going to find me when you get free.
That's the key.
Yeah, the problem with retirement, it was invented back in the 1880s by Otto von Bismarck, trying to get the young out of the workforce back in the 1880s. I think 70-something% of people over the age of 65 continued to work. They didn't think of it as retirement. You know, your work is your vocation. That's what you think of. But as the years went on, we got thrown into this belief of, hey, we need to get rid of the old people and get them out of the workforce and replant them with the young. There's enough work and enough jobs to have everybody work. We want people to be productive in society. The more productive we are, the more taxes we collect, the more people living in a higher level. And I think if you look back at history, why do they do that? And if you can just understand that as you get older, find something that you like. I mean, it's just that simple. We're being taught these things that nobody challenges them anymore. And it's just, you know, you're saying first principle, logical, emotional. Get your emotions. Find out what you really like. And at a certain point, stop blaming others and take responsibility, because it really is up to you what you like. We're all unique. Like you mentioned God a couple times.
Don't be afraid of committing, right, Gino? Like, don't be afraid of putting yourself out there, being willing to fail, and figuring something out that's going to create growth in your life and in the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Give us, I always love to give people actionable content and where to start. Now, Gino's going to trade his Speedo because he's not going to be at the pool doing it anymore. We get that. You know, sometimes you got to get out there, Gino, if it's Saturday and the pool boy's not there and you're the pool boy, I get that. But Dan, what are the top three buybacks that you recommend people starting with?
Yeah, the first one is an executive assistant. And the reason why is a lot of this stuff that we talked about, bookkeeping, editing, scheduling, inbox management, all these things. And it's in the book, I talk about the replacement ladder, and this is level one. And it's because mathematically there's nothing that could buy the largest swath of time for the least amount of investment than somebody that helps you with administrative tasks. So it's just a mathematical equation. That would be the first thing. And then I would say, and it's an advanced move, I've coached a lot of CEOs on this, and it's bringing support into the home, right? So we talked about house cleaning for sure. But here's the frame I want people to consider. I call it four seasons living, right? And I got this from Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach, talks about it, is I want to live in my home as if I live in the four seasons. So imagine if I'm in the four seasons, I don't make my bed. I can call room service up to have my meals made. I literally can go to the gym and walk out of the gym and I'm not dealing with anything. And the reason I share this is because it's that energy management, right? Like, we have a house manager, Betty, who's incredible. And she literally is, and this is the way I frame it. And I talk about the last chapter of the book. I didn't even talk about it in the book because I knew that for some people, if I can't spend a dollar to make $5 and I'm not going to buy back my time. Okay, fair. I'll give you all of that. But the real big win is when you start bringing it into your home. And Betty wakes up every day and she knows she's the CEO of all my personal assets. Anything my wife or I would have to do, groceries.
And she's not the executive assistant.
No, she reports to my executive
assistant.
Just
to get clear. Yeah.
Yep. My executive assistant. Now, I'm at a level where I'm running 2 8-figure companies and have a portfolio of things I'm responsible for. So I have that level of demand on my time. I mean, I'm literally interviewing 4 CEOs right now to run companies for me. So again, it's a different level, but it's the same philosophy. The house manager, and Betty has a team. She has Sarah, the cleaning lady, and the pool people and all the yard people, but she manages the orchestration. So if I'm sitting here and I need a protein shake because I'm on a call with you guys, I just text Betty and it shows up in my hand. Right now, that's not a flex. Some people.
Jake's text Whitney. Hold on a second. Time out. Jake texts.
Gino's about to put my wife out of business. That's right. He's about to put her on the street.
Did you get the shake this morning? By the way, I got mine.
And this is the thing is some people do have their spouse.
We're such three fucking losers. Everybody's holding up their protein shake right now. All right, this is a problem. We got to fucking never do the show again. I can't live myself. Sorry, carry on.
But even like the I have a lot of clients that have their wife support. One of my clients, Scott, his wife does all this. He's like, oh, that's what my wife does. I go, okay, cool. But if I ask your wife if she has time for herself to go have lunch with her friends, go to the gym, etc., she may not feel that she can because she's responsible to do all.
My wife
other
is Betty right now.
Awesome.
My wife's got like a team of three or four underneath her. So she's Betty, but she's about to get promoted up here after this show.
And maybe you all of a sudden give all that stuff to your executive assistant to deal with, and then they manage those people so your wife can just show up as a mom and do her own. Like, this is, to me, I look at like me first, buy back my time, then my executive team, then the people in my life, right? And to the degree that, because then I want freedom for all of us to, if I will call my wife up and say, like, last Thursday we went and played laser tag for our date night, I just want to be able to go do that. I don't want her to say I can't because I bought this thing on the internet and I got to spend 2 hours putting it together. It's like, no. Like, there's, and don't ask me to do it.
That is the worst. Yeah. Never, ever, anyone listening, the one thing you can get from this show today, never order something that you're going to have to fucking put together again. No, I'm serious. If you stop doing that, the show just brought you back
time.
So much of your time.
Yep. Literally, yeah. There's things, and that's why I talk
the
about
Pottery
the five
Barn
time
will
assassins.
Come build it in your living room for you. Yes.
Yes. Add it as the upgrade, like show up and install. Like, it's a check mark for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's like even using delivery services, right? Even, but it's all this like self-worth stuff. That's why I wrote the five time assassins in the book, because a lot of this is self-inflicted. It's you not worthy, you not feeling worthy, you worrying about what other people are going to say. I have clients that like, I don't want my dad to find out that I'm not mowing my own lawn or doing my own mechanic
Dude,
work
that
on
was
my car.
So hard for me when I gave that up.
It's a real
like
thing.
Like my dad, my grandfather, I thought were going to beat the fuck out of me if I wasn't
yep.
mowing my grass.
You're not
like,
a man.
It scared the shit out of me. Yeah.
Yep.
What are you
or
doing?
My kids. But this is my kids say this to me. They go, well, you don't do that. And I go, when you get to a place to be able to pay somebody else to do it, you don't have to do it anymore either.
Talk
I'm rich. You're not.
Amen.
That's great. Because I just had a conversation with Veronica. She's making $12 an hour. She's 14 years old at the gym. I'm like, that's great. You know how much I make an hour? She goes, how much? I said a lot more than you. She goes, well, that's not fair. Well, too bad. That's what happens when you get skills. But Dan, this is for all the listeners out there, because this is important, because you may not be at the level of a Dan or a Jake. You may not be at that level yet. It's like Jake and I, when we bought our first property, we weren't there either. You are at a certain stage in your life. As you continue on the journey and you start buying more assets and start buying more multifamily, you have to leave the person that you were when you first started. And that's just the reality. And as you grow, and how do you do that? By coaching, by going out and seeing what other people have done. And that's a really hard thing to do. And if you don't do that, you'll become a mom and pop. Jake and I will come and buy your property, and that's what ends up happening. And you start layering. Dan didn't say he got married and he's got Betty working with him. Dan said he got Betty now in the last few years that he's got all these different companies. When you look for something, when you think you need something or an employee or whatever, that's when you know you have to do it. And that's the hardest thing for an entrepreneur, is to get rid of that little task and to say, let me find the Bettys in the world that can help me out. So don't think right now, well, I'm not in the position of where these gentlemen are and I can't do that. Just start small, and as you grow, continue to buy back that time will allow you to grow even more and start focusing on the things that you do love.
I love
Dan,
it.
Dan, have you seen Billions?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite. Axel, yeah, what's his name? Bobby Axelrod. Yeah.
Do you have a Chef Ryan at home too?
So Betty's our Chef Ryan, because we use Fresh Prep, which is like a meal order service. So she at least puts it together, but I would not let her cook for me. I have had chefs in the past, but what's fun about this game is you're buying back the time for your team. So at a certain point, when you start, it's like get the house cleaner, get a meal prep service, have somebody come wash your car, whatever. But then once you have enough like volume of stuff, then you're like, you know what? If I had a person dedicated to this outcome, you talked about that, Jake, outcomes. Now I have somebody that owns the outcomes. And now Betty's upgraded her skill level. She's actually she's working on buying me vacation homes, which sounds crazy, but like I have her working with my real estate agents in different geographies, putting the deals together for me to sit down every week and review which ones we want to get and showing them to my wife. And so like, I just think people think this is something I have to wait until I have an exit till I'm worth $100 million. This is something everybody listening to could get to in 2 to 3 years if they actually work towards. Like an executive assistant and a house manager, not that crazy, and would literally buy you back 60, 80 hours a week of your time so that you could just show up and be you 100%.
Treat yourself. Time to get pampered, folks. Let's do it.
Here we go.
So one of the things that has changed my life is I've just been very dedicated to my schedule, and it prevents me from having to think all the shit that you've heard, right? So that's probably one of the best habits over the last 15 years that I've implemented. What you say, you may have already alluded to this, but what is your best habit for success?
There's a lot, but I would say, because it's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And you talk about the calendar, and in the book, I have this whole chapter called The Perfect Week, and I give my actual week structure. It's right here. So this is in the book and templates and everything. And this is mine, and people should use their own, but I teach you how to design it. If you made me pick one, it's probably my gratitude practice. Like I'm a
Seriously?
Big fan. Probably, yep. Blissful dissatisfaction is what I call it.
Because I do it. I just haven't seen the full result yet. But carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, I think the full result is there. You just may not attribute that practice to the outcome. So for me, being able to be incredibly grateful for what I have and detach from outcome, but still be crazy driven, allows me to live a higher quality life. Because I think prior to that, when I was in my 20s, I was so success driven, possessions and prestige and all these things, that I had an unhealthy relationship with that, that caused a lot of emotional shrapnel in my life. I was engaged at 27. That didn't work out. I literally was just a horrible friend, a horrible person to be around. And now that I've gotten to a place where it's like, I'm grateful for everything I have, but I'm incredibly driven. And the whole thing about credit, about the team, like that's probably the biggest thing about my journey that I would say gratitude supported me on, is allowing me to co-create with other people and not have anybody know that it was me behind the scenes. Like most people, as they get to know me, will learn about things that I've done that I've never talked about ever. Because I'm not the CEO of these things. Like I own a virtual assistant company. You won't find anywhere on the internet where I talk about it, because Josh, the CEO, runs it and it's his thing. And I'm grateful that he wakes up every day and he pushes that forward. I don't even talk about it in my book, which is probably a stupid business decision, but it just is what it is. So like, I'm a big fan of just gratitude, but I would say working out it's like working out in gratitude, but I actually work out to have the mindset that I think gratitude can also bring. So, but like every morning I work out not for my body, but for my mind.
Awesome. All right. A book that's added value to your life in the last few years, so we can share with the folks, and we're going to get this thing wrapped in just a second here.
Happy Pocket Full of Money. It's a sleeper. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it.
I'm going to read it after today.
Well, read mine first, Jake. This is the one. I think you'll love this one.
Committed to two, and that's a big deal, all right? They got to both be on Audible. I appreciate it. I can't read. So.
I read my book, and I added bonus chapters on Audible because I'm the same with you, and I judge hard the people that don't read their own book. So you'll get to enjoy my sultry voice. I had the flu when I read it, but it sounded okay. And I would say, yeah, Happy Pocket Full of Money is just one of these books that if you're into a little bit of spirituality mixed with wealth, it'll be a really fun read for you that a lot of people don't talk about. It's like Think and Grow Rich. Then I would put Happy Pocket Full of Money, and then I would go to Abraham Hicks, and some of the wooest people on the call will be like, did he just say Abraham Hicks? Yeah, I did. So like there's levels to this.
You know,
this,
woo.
I'm very woo.
Gino is
I'm
Mr.
practical.
Gino
I'm
is
like
vibrating through the woo right now. Ca-caw, well, this ca-caw.
I still have the picture of him in Speedos in my mind, so I've just got him doing the dance in a mankini.
You never knew how like I was gonna brand your mind, and you'd be impacted from this show today. Like
I'll
he's
never unknow
after
that.
This.
Yeah.
So you, what about the guinea tea? I gotta get the guinea tea on there too, Jake. Right?
The gold chain. I love it.
Too, so yeah.
All right, Gino. Before you wrap it up, Dan, best places to find the book and more about you.
Yeah, buybackyourtime.com is the best place. That way I can tag you in a pixel and keep berating you until you consume the book. Number two is Instagram stories, Dan Martell. Jake, I think I found you and messaged you this morning. Gino, I'm going to find you. I put my whole life on display to hopefully be an example and demonstrate how I do a lot of this stuff behind the scenes so that people can see it in action, because I know that's the way I learn. And then I'm on all social platforms from TikTok to LinkedIn to YouTube. I've got some big audiences there, and I'm active. It's one of my favorite things to do.
Gino, no pressure. What you got?
Wow. Dan Martell, young 15-year-old, in the hole for 23 and a half hours.
The clink.
For 3 days. And finally gets out, and the guard says to him, Dan, what are you doing here? And Dan, in his intelligence, says, I don't know. I got into a fight. No, Dan, what are you really doing here? And we all have that pivotal moment in our lives when we have that conversation with somebody that just rattles us and shakes us to the core. And for everybody listening out there, has that happened to you yet? And if it hasn't, be on the lookout for it, because God does amazing things. And throughout his journey, Dan goes back to jail. You think he learned the first time? No, he had to repeat again. He made a mistake again. And I think that was another opportunity, because when he left, he's out in the woods and he's in the cabin looking at the book, and he picks up the book, and something that Jake and I would probably look at and go, what the hell is this? This ain't for us. We can barely turn a computer on. But Dan found this passion in that book and going on. And I heard him say at 27 years of age, he wasn't a great person, still wasn't the great guy that he wanted to be. And that's what it's all about. It's all about the journey and continuing along that journey, finding your passion, being able to buy back little bits of your time as you're doing it, having the abundance mindset that Dan obviously employs, because he's willing to share a lot of it. Really, the pie is not finite. The pie to Dan is infinite. Having a little bit of everything and being able to share and being able to have a lot of these leadership principles has allowed him to continue to grow. And I love the gratitude. Jake, I'm grateful for you, bro.
I'm grateful for you. And Dan, I'm grateful for you today too, my man.
I'm grateful for Dan for being on the show and sharing the book. I mean, like, I'll hold up one more time for everybody. Buy back your time. Like, seriously, think about it. And if there's anything that you can do, is there a Betty in your life that can help you out with your life?
And create some jobs. You can make Betty's life better. Boom shakalaka. I love it.
Yep.
Man, this was fun. This was a lot of fun. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. Dan, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Dan.
My pleasure, guys. Appreciate you guys. Talk soon.